I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story. The AstraZeneca vaccine is associated with a rare blood clotting syndrome known as TTS. Overseas, in the first few months of the AstraZeneca rollout, the mortality rates for people who developed TTS were high, and in some places, they've remained high. But Australia's death rate is much, much lower. The reason for that may lie with a group of Australian doctors and scientists. Today, why are Australia's deaths from vaccine-linked blood clots so low? It's Thursday, the 7th of October. Hello, Dr. Chen.
Hey, is that Laura?
Yes, how are you going?
Good, good. Lovely to meet you.
I have commandeered my elder son's bedroom in order to do this interview, and I've kicked the rest of the family out for a daytime walk.
Okay, so Dr. Chen, can you please introduce yourself and where you work and anything about yourself that you want to share?
So my name is Vivian Chen. I'm a haematologist, which is a blood specialist, and my subspecialty is actually in looking after people with blood clots and bleeding. And so I head the blood clotting and bleeding service at Concord Hospital in Sydney. I also am head of a research lab, the platelet and thrombosis research lab at the ANZAC Research Institute, as part of the University of Sydney.
A lot of Dr. Chen's life revolves around blood. It's something that she finds fascinating.
Blood is everywhere. It affects our health and disease in all aspects. And in particular, the subspecialty of haematology is one that links patient care, which I love, and laboratory diagnostics, which I love.
Right. So it sounds like you work between a kind of research lab and a hospital. That sounds like it could get quite busy sometimes. What's your average day or week like?
Very busy. So multiple roles and, family life as well. It is difficult to juggle.
In March this year, Dr. Chen's life got even busier. Australia began rolling out the AstraZeneca vaccine to high priority groups in the first week of March. But just a week later, country after country announced they were suspending the use of AstraZeneca due to an extremely rare syndrome linked to the vaccine that was causing blood clots, known as TTS.
So TTS, or thrombotic thrombocytopenic syndrome, is a new syndrome that has only just developed this year. So it is a reaction that certain individuals have to an adenoviral vaccine, of which the AstraZeneca vaccine is a adenoviral vaccine, and a very small proportion of individuals will develop what's called an autoantibody, an antibody that has been triggered by the vaccine. And that autoantibody recognises and activates platelets, the platelets being the blood clotting fragments, and it activates them in a very dramatic way.
So it's like a rogue antibody, kind of.
Indeed, indeed. And it forms an immune complex, which really strongly activates the platelets, making them aggregate and form clots inside the blood vessels and drives what can be a catastrophic blood clotting process.
What do you mean by catastrophic?
A large proportion of the patients with TTS have clots that affect the veins that drain the brain and also the veins that drain the gut. And blood clots in these two areas can cause really significant problems. And unfortunately, blood clots in these areas have a high death rate associated with them.
So initially, the mortality based on data from Europe was quite high.
Melissa Davey is medical editor at Guardian Australia.
It was between 25% and 50% of those people who developed TTS died in those first months. And then if you look at more recent data from the UK, from the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency over there, their data up to the 22nd of September this year shows that they've received reports of 419 cases of TTS, and the overall case fatality rate is 17%, so that's 72 deaths.
The thing to keep in mind is it's extremely rare to develop TTS in the first place.
And these are small numbers compared to the millions of people who have received the vaccines with no adverse side effects or no serious ones. It is worrying, though, for people who do get TTS to be told that you have a 25 to 50% chance of dying. So Dr. Chen and other experts in the field were watching what was happening overseas very closely and thought, well, Australia needs to be on top of this and we need to do better than a potentially 50% death rate.
So I formed an advisory group to deal with the TTS syndrome. It's the THANS, which stands for Thrombosis Hemostasis Society of Australia New Zealand, VID Advisory Group, and I'm the chair.
Dr. Chen essentially led these meetings with experts from around the country and also from New Zealand as well, and she wasn't asked to do this by anyone. It's not like someone from the government said, you know, we need you to bring these people together. She just saw what was happening overseas, knew that the rollout of the vaccine in Australia was imminent, and she led this initiative to bring all these brilliant people together. And she was doing this approaching the Easter weekend, trying to get people together over Easter.
Well, I cancelled my Easter trip away, so my poor husband and children have given up a lot for the work that has gone into managing the syndrome.
I mean, what was that like? Was it just a dozen or so people on a Zoom call? What did it look like?
We met by Zoom because of the urgency. We met after hours and on weekends, and we decided what we felt we needed to do in order to give the patients the best possible management.
By this time, late March, Australia had not restricted or suspended the use of AstraZeneca, unlike other countries. So this group of doctors and scientists starts to work out how they're going to deal with these potential blood clots.
So we had a two-pronged approach. The first thing is that we realised that we did not have the diagnostic tests set up in Australia to actually diagnose this syndrome at that time. And so we needed to very rapidly mobilise two things at once. One, a clinical management pathway so that we could educate our colleagues to recognise this syndrome and intervene in the correct way if they saw patients presenting with vaccine-induced thrombosis. And in parallel, we needed to set up a centralised diagnostic system and ensure that they were getting the optimal therapies.
Right. So she assembles this group of experts. They come together. They start meeting. What did they decide to do about this issue of the high fatality rates of TTS overseas?
Really early on in the piece, Dr. Chen was talking to experts in Germany about diagnostic testing. So one of the first things that they did here was set up the diagnostic testing for TTS in Australia in Dr. Chen's lab in Sydney. So, you know, what test do you do to work out if someone has TTS? And to do this, they needed access to the experts in Germany for blood samples from positive and negative TTS cases. We didn't have any positive cases here yet, so we didn't have access to the blood. So she had to organise that. And then in these meetings, they developed a possible treatment protocol. So basically a way for doctors to tell the difference between someone who has TTS and someone who has a regular blood clot. You know, regular blood clots are concerning, but they're not as serious or as deadly as TTS. And it's really important with TTS to get really early treatment. You can't kind of delay thinking, oh, let's just see what this will turn into. You have to get onto it very, very quickly or it can be more serious.
We know that if we intervene early, that we can improve outcomes. We need our doctors to recognise that this can be a catastrophic problem, but that there are interventions that can improve the outcomes.
And what was in this protocol? How do you treat someone with TTS differently than when they just have a regular blood clot?
So when you have clotting, you need to thin the blood to prevent the clotting. And what doctors were finding is that a regular blood thinning medication called heparin just wasn't working against TTS. So the team needed something else in their arsenal. And there is a class of medication called non-heparin blood thinning medications. So they turned towards these, but they also needed to administer this in combination with another treatment called intravenous immune globulin, known as IVIG.
This is a blood product. It's given by infusion and it is a precious commodity.
But accessing IVIG is pretty hard for various reasons. It requires permission from the National Blood Authority, and that can take weeks in some cases. We talked about how time is just so essential with TTS patients, and these doctors didn't have weeks.
We needed patients to receive this within an hour of making the diagnosis.
Sounds like this was a real race against time here. How did it go?
So they managed to get urgent access in place. There is a haematologist in Melbourne called Dr. Huyen Tran, and he just got on the phone to the National Blood Authority and said, look, you need to approve this treatment for TTS and we need someone on call 24 hours a day to approve it. And they got all of that in place.
What happened next?
It was actually the evening of Easter Thursday. We were meeting to finalise our guidance statement when one of the members of our group told us he'd just been called about a patient whose criteria fit this syndrome.
Dr. Tran received the inevitable phone call that there might be the first case of TTS in Australia. And so he received that call while also in this meeting talking about what do we do to treat it? What are we going to decide on?
It's incredible that, you know, they were there meeting, trying to solve this problem, and there you go, the first case. Let's get into action.
Exactly, and that's what the group did. I mean, thankfully, by the time they had this meeting, they did have some draft guidelines in place, so it's not like the patient was wheeled in and they were still finalising what do we do, but it was about then communicating with the doctors in the hospital and making sure that that first patient got the treatment they'd decided on.
Next, the plan to treat these blood clots is put to the test. Right, so tell me about this first patient and what happened with them.
The first patient was actually a health worker, a 44-year-old man, and he turned up to a Melbourne emergency department complaining of fever, fatigue, head fogginess, and one of the most telling symptoms, really serious abdominal pain.
And we thought that he probably had one of those blood clots in his gut, and he was very unwell.
8 days earlier, he'd received his first dose of the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine. So these guidelines that the group of experts in the room were finalising were about to come in handy. As he was being wheeled to a scanner to look for blood clots, this patient was already being given the non-heparin blood thinning medications and the IVIC products were on their way, ready to be administered.
And the group of us were on the Zoom together, giving real-time advice as to how to manage this patient. And we were debating what would be the best blood thinning medication to give him. And at the same time, the blood was being sent to my lab in Sydney so that we could do a confirmatory diagnosis using a brand new test that we had just developed for this syndrome.
So it was a tricky case for the doctors. It was a serious case.
And he had a very severe blood clotting syndrome affecting the gut. So the patient survived, which is the outcome, of course, that we want.
The first case would have been a very steep learning curve. Not only was it a case, it was a serious case. And they continued to learn more with each new TTS patient that came through the doors around Australia.
The thing that we've continued to do with our vet advisory committee is that we continued to meet at least once a week where we discussed every case that we saw, what was working, what was not working.
What happens now if you present to hospital with symptoms of TTS, and how much does that have to do with this expert group?
So they do everything we spoke about, the IVIG combined with the non-heparin blood thinning treatment. But also they have a checklist where they run through different symptoms and can identify cases very, very early. So when someone comes to hospital or to their GP, there are guidelines as to what to look for and when you might refer patients onto those treatments we talked about. So that happens quickly. And these diagnostic and treatment guidelines have been shared by the peak body all throughout Australia. So they're very, very widely publicised. The doctors have done a great job at making sure they've been distributed. And on top of that, there's also really high public awareness. You know, when you go and get a vaccine, you're given a sheet of symptoms to look out for, and you're told about that at the point of vaccination.
And what has all this meant for TTS-related deaths in Australia? Has it made an impact?
Yeah, so you'll remember that when we first mentioned the fatality rate overseas from the very early data from Europe, the death rate was about 25%, 50%.
Mm.
Australia has a case fatality rate from TTS of just over 5%. So it's drastically lower. And if you look at data from the UK, so it's the death rate is going down throughout the world as treatment improves and these guidelines are put in place. But even in the UK, the latest data from September shows that of those who develop TTS, about 17% of cases die. So again, 5% is much lower than that.
I mean, that sounds quite low compared to what people were expecting.
It's much better than a 50-50 chance of dying if you get TTS, right? So the latest figures from Australia show that there have been 148 cases of TTS. The majority of those have left hospital. 8 of those cases have proved fatal. So most cases, 129, have been discharged from hospital. So it's important to remember there are some people with ongoing health issues that are still being treated. But those cases are from 11.6 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine. So the risk of dying from TTS after vaccination is about 1 in 1 million in people who have received the first dose. And the risk is even lower after a second dose. You know, most people seem to get this syndrome after the first dose of the vaccine.
I imagine it's satisfying looking at those figures. How do you feel when you see that?
In a way, it's satisfying, Laura, but I feel for every individual that does not make it through. And we wish that we could prevent all deaths and complications from this syndrome.
Considering this stat that you've just told me, I mean, 1 in 1 million, does that change the safety advice of AstraZeneca? We know that Pfizer is still preferred for many people.
Yes, the Itagi advice is still that the Pfizer vaccine should be preferred for those under 60 years old in non-outbreak settings because of that risk of TTS. And the co-chair of Itagi, Professor Alan Cheng, who is himself an infectious diseases physician, he's also an epidemiologist, he said that the most severe cases of TTS are in younger people. And like we mentioned before, it involves clots in the brain or the abdomen. And even if you don't die, these can lead to long-term health issues. So with the severity seemingly skewed towards younger people and younger women in particular, the guidelines are still appropriate. The cases that do occur can be very, very serious. I think it's also important to think about if we had a medicine that had been widely administered and it came out a couple of decades later that dozens of people had died from serious clotting, or even, you know, a handful of people had died from something very serious, and that many, many more were affected with long-term health issues or were hospitalized with complications. That would be a bit of a scandal that hadn't been revealed to people at the time, that they weren't told about those side effects. So I think that even though this is extremely rare, it's not inappropriate that Itagi has highlighted that this is an issue and come up with some guidelines to make the risk really, really low.
So Mel, I think a lot of people would assume that this is something that the government would have led, not a group of volunteer doctors and scientists just doing this off their own bat.
Yeah, it's a really good point. So the expert group are continuing to monitor and study all TTS patients that come their way.
The other aspect of what we're trying to do is to lead some of the global mechanistic research into understanding why TTS occurs. Are there additional ways that we can improve the outcomes of people that get these kinds of immune-mediated blood clots? Can we identify the people at risk?
They're hoping to learn about whether there's any risk factors. You know, at the moment, it seems that being vaccinated with the AstraZeneca vaccine is the only kind of common factor in all of these cases. So they really want to better identify those at risk and find out whether or not there are any other treatments as well that we might be able to access. But unfortunately, they're not well funded at all. They've got a little bit of funding from the New South Wales government, but they don't have secure ongoing funding to do this work.
The community has come together to do this without funding. So many of us have pivoted the research in our labs towards VIT because we think it's such an important syndrome to understand and to make a difference in. Funding from any source would be highly welcome.
I mean, surely it was enough that they started this with nothing and now they're continuing this research with only a little bit of funding. It really does seem like a very dedicated group of doctors here.
Yeah, so, you know, I think with doctors like this, they will continue to do their work regardless. They're just such good and altruistic people. It would be nice to think that we support people like this and we see the value of their work and give them some secure funding to keep doing what they do.
Because we have a duty of care to our vaccinated population. And so that's very satisfying to prevent the complication occurring in the first place.
We wouldn't be in the position we are now without that hard work from Dr. Chen and all the experts in the room that day.
That was Melissa Davey, our medical editor. You can read more from Melissa at theguardian.com, and we've put a link to her story about Dr. Chen and the team of experts on the full story page. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria, Ellen Leibeater, and Jane Lee. Sound design by Daniel Simo. The executive producers are Gabrielle Jackson, Miles Martignoni, and myself, Laura Murphy Oates. I'll be back on Monday, but check out Newsroom Edition with Gabrielle Jackson tomorrow.